Well, good evening once again. It is indeed good to be with you. Day 37 of the Biden administration. And tonight, the breaking news we are covering concerns President Biden's first military action as president. He tonight ordered U.S. forces to carry out airstrikes in eastern Syria, targeting infrastructure used by Iranian-backed militia groups. The Pentagon says the action was in response to several recent and troubling rocket attacks against American and coalition forces in Iraq. Not long ago, the new Secretary of Defense, retired General Lloyd Austin, briefed reporters on the airstrikes.
We're confident that that target was being used by the same Shia militia that conducted the strikes. We allowed and encouraged the Iraqis to investigate and develop intelligence, and that was very helpful to us in refining the target.
When did the president authorize the strikes? Were you on the phone with him?
It was today, yes.
It was today. Was it this morning? Did you relate?
Yes, it was this morning.
These strikes come a week after the White House signaled its willingness to renew talks on a nuclear deal that President Trump shelved. Our NBC News colleague Richard Engel says tonight's military response, while targeted on Syrian soil, was indeed intended to send a deliberate message to Iran.
In this case, it is a message that President Biden and the Pentagon are sending directly to Iran. Even though President Biden wants to negotiate with Iran, he is sending a message that that negotiation does not mean that it is open season for U.S. personnel in the Middle East. I see this as the stick in the carrot and stick process of diplomacy.
Of course, amid all this, the president is also trying to convince Congress to pass his almost $2 trillion COVID relief bill, which the House is set to vote on tomorrow. Tonight, the Senate parliamentarian said Biden's proposed $15 an hour minimum wage increase cannot be included in this bill. It's a decision that affects millions of Americans who are working right now in minimum wage jobs. Tonight, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said the House measure being voted on tomorrow will indeed include that $15 minimum wage, which just means it will need to be stripped out of the bill when it goes over to the Senate side. President Biden spent part of his day meeting with the nation's governors virtually, trying to build support for the bill. But despite public support for it, Republican Senate opposition to the measure seems to be holding together.
This isn't a coronavirus bill. This is a left of Lenin neo-socialist wish list. I mean, it just is. It is chock full of spending porn.
The Senate Majority Leader offered this in response.
To the left of Lenin, money for schools, vaccines, direct checks to struggling American families, checks that nearly every member of the Senate supported just a few months ago. Now it's to the left of Lenin.
There was one more bit of surprising news tonight, a breathtaking about-face from Mitch McConnell, the Senate Minority Leader. In an interview on Fox News this evening, McConnell was asked about his party's future. His response seemed in direct conflict to what he was saying just 12 days ago.
Well, there's a lot to happen between now and 24. I've got at least four members that I think are planning on running for president, plus some governors and others. There's no incumbent. Should be a wide open race and fun for you all to cover.
If the president was the party's nominee, would you support him?
The nominee of the party? Absolutely.
There's no question. None. That President Trump is practically and morally responsible for provoking the events of the day. The people who stormed this building believed they were acting on the wishes and instructions of their president. A mob was assaulting the Capitol in his name. These criminals were carrying his banners, hanging his flags, and screaming their loyalty to him.
What a difference 12 days makes. McConnell's continued support comes just as Trump is about to reemerge onto the political stage following his departure from the White House and, as long as we're keeping score, his second impeachment. this time for incitement to insurrection. He is still expected to give a speech Sunday at the conservative convention that's getting underway tomorrow in Orlando. Tomorrow, the current president and first lady are heading to Texas. The White House says President Biden will spend the day surveying storm damage in that state, part of it with the state's Governor Greg Abbott. It's a lot. With that, let's bring in our leadoff guests on this Thursday night, Jonathan Lemire, White House reporter for the Associated Press. We also welcome to the broadcast Courtney Subramanian, White House correspondent for USA Today. Also back with us, General Barry McCaffrey, decorated combat veteran of Vietnam, former battlefield commander in the Persian Gulf, former cabinet member, member of the National Security Council. He retired as a four-star general in the U.S. Army. And, General, that's exactly why we're going to begin with you tonight and your assessment of what we know about this military strike. It was a bit of a bank shot diplomatically, if not militarily, for us. We decided we could not hit Iran proper or targets there by adding a crater to the already pockmarked countryside of Syria. We were able to hit Iranian targets just the same, correct?
Yeah, that's quite an example. Yeah, not only did we not hit Iran, we also didn't carry out a strike in Iraq. And the approximate cause of our concern were three rocket attacks. First up, an Erbil, which killed a U.S. contractor and wounded several others, plus NATO forces. Another one hit a base just north of Baghdad. And finally, they took on the embassy and fortunately missed. So, look, we got a very experienced team. Secretary Lloyd Austin spent half his life in the Middle East. Tony Blinken's a very experienced, sober-minded diplomat who had already started the engagement with the Iranians. And Jake Sullivan, and the National Security Council advisor, is also a very experienced man. So I think it was a modulated, my understanding is it was 7 500-pound bombs and sort of a very limited target set right on the Syrian border. But a good signal to the Iranians. They're under severe economic sanctions. They got to get out of it. They need to negotiate. They've been playing with us. This was a good move.
And Jonathan Lemire, on your beat, just to right-size your expectations and the tradition of what we were used to prior to the last 4 years, no advance warning, no tough talk, no talk of people dying like dogs in the field. This might suppress, might it not, Republican talk that Joe Biden was perhaps going to be weak on Iran?
Yeah, Brian, we also didn't get a tweet comparing the size of his button, which, of course, Donald Trump did with Kim Jong-un when they talked about his missile arsenal. Yes, I think that's right. This is, of course, it's a big moment for any president. This is his first time ordering a military intervention, ordering an airstrike. It's his first moment truly as commander in chief for President Biden. And it's one, of course, he does not take lightly. He was vice president for 8 years. He was firsthand right there, feet away from President Obama when he made similar decisions. He also, of course, had decades in the Senate, is fully aware of the gravity of these decisions. And of course, let's not ever forget that his son, Beau Biden, did serve as well in the military. And I've been there with President Biden, even just in the first weeks in office, talking about the sacred responsibility he has. And I think you're right. This will certainly allay, at least for now, Republican concerns about where Biden's approach might be to the Middle East. His administration on the whole seemed more inclined to pivot towards China than what we have seen in the Middle East. But he's also, of course, not willing to pull out troops, not entirely, from Afghanistan. And this is a message to Iran. As the nuclear contract, that pact, its future remains in doubt, that the United States is not going to tolerate what we saw, acts of aggression that would injure U.S. personnel.
Courtney Subramanian, we're delighted to have you. In the meantime, covering the White House, Biden is behind on cabinet nominations. Of course, as is immediately pointed out, he did not have the luxury or benefit of a proper transition. And it looks like they may be headed for their first big defeat if the vote on Neera Tanden goes down for OMB. What other job might they have in the works for her?
Yeah, I mean, the White House is still standing firm on Neera Tanden. I've talked to people in the White House and people behind her confirmation, and they're continuing to press that she's continuing to speak to senators. They've circulated material on her resume, and, you know, including policy achievements around education and criminal justice reform, as well as budget and tax. So they're still marching forward with her nomination. But if she's not able to get confirmed, they could stick her in a role where she might not need confirmation through the Senate, and she could still have an opportunity to shape some of the policy and serve the president in an advisory role.
Jonathan Lemire, back over to you. Big blow to a lot of Democrats across the country tonight to learn of the nonpartisan parliamentarian in the Senate kicking out the minimum wage part of this huge bill. How big a blow is it to the Biden White House when they got that news?
The word parliamentarian is not one we use enough, Brian, here in this country. It comes as a disappointment to the Biden White House. We've got a statement from Press Secretary Jen Psaki just a short time ago suggesting that, yes, the White House was dismayed about this decision, but would not choose to fight it. That, in fact, President Biden foreshadowed this just a few days ago, where he was asked about it and suggested that he wasn't sure that the parliamentarian would allow the minimum wage portion to be part of this bill. And of course, very few know the Senate like he does, being there for more than three decades. It's a blow to the White House for sure. Also progressives across the party who were counting on this and wanted this to be part of this package. It does alleviate concerns from some Republicans who felt like that minimum wage shouldn't be a part of this deal. Whether that changes any of their minds and whether they now want to vote for perhaps this bill, if it does not end up including the minimum wage in its finished product, we know that Speaker Pelosi still is going to include it in the House when they vote on it tomorrow. That remains to be seen. The Democrats in the White House are clearly willing to go it alone. As much as they'd like bipartisan support, they know they can do this through reconciliation. They can pass it. This is something that they want to get done as soon as possible, and the clock is ticking. The deadline they've given themselves is the middle of March. That's when a lot of these unemployment benefits expire, and they ideally want this minimum wage portion to be in. Even if not, they're going to forge forward. They know the country needs this as soon as possible.
And Courtney, help us do some of these additional cabinet housekeeping details. They got Granholm for energy still outstanding. The votes, correct me if I'm wrong, for Garland, HHS Secretary Designate Becerra, and Holland at Interior. Are you getting any whiffs that any of those votes may go down? Garland appears to have the kind of cushion to pass with quite a margin.
Yeah, you know, Becerra and Holland, you know, seem to be in the hot seat this week. There was some pushback among Democrats who thought that, you know, Republicans and Senator Joe Manchin, who is the one Democrat who's come out against Neera Tanden and had initially said he wasn't sure how he was going to vote on Holland or Becerra. There was some criticism that they were targeting the president's cabinet picks, who are women and people of color. Obviously, Becerra would be the first Latino to run HHS, and Congresswoman Holland would be the first Native American to serve in a presidential cabinet. But those two, Becerra and Holland, seem to be back on a smooth track to confirmation this week. After their hearings, Senator Manchin has said that he is willing to vote for Congresswoman Holland, you know, despite their differences. And so really the person that the White House seems to be most worried about, most vulnerable, is Neera Tanden, and has actually reached out to 28 Senate offices since Friday, since Senator Manchin said he wouldn't vote for her in part of that effort to try and push through her nomination.
General McCaffrey, I saved one for you based on something I saw on social media tonight that I'd like to read for you. 30 years ago today, by the end of the day two of Desert Storm ground war, the end was near. U.S. forces captured 20,000 Iraqi prisoners and destroyed 270 tanks. Kuwaiti resistance leaders were in control of Kuwait City. Saddam ordered his troops to withdraw from Kuwait. 30 years ago tonight, General, any idea where you were?
I can sure remember it very clearly. We had a 30-day air campaign followed by essentially a four-day ground campaign that utterly took apart the Iraqi armed forces and the Iraqi Air Force and ended up with peace and regained Kuwait. And we did it, notwithstanding several hundred killed and wounded, with minimal casualties. I thought my division would have a couple of thousand killed and wounded. We had 8 killed and 36 wounded. So it was an incredible display of professionalism and diplomatic endeavor backing us up that brought a very quick end to a dreadful situation in the Middle East.
There's a picture on your Twitter feed at the very top, the header above your name, that shows a remarkably young two-star general. Can't possibly be you in the sands of the desert, could it?
Well, and that captain next to me in the turret, Captain Steph Twitty, just retired as a lieutenant general, an incredible soldier. So a lot of these, the Victory Division soldiers, the sailors, airmen, Marines, Coast Guard, Army involved in that operation, pulled together by this magnificent genius, Schwarzkopf, produced a classic military victory that saved lives, to include Iraqis.
Number of us got to meet and got to know now General Twitty. I can't thank our big three enough for tonight. General McCaffrey, thank you for taking a walk back through the sandbox and memory lane, as it were. Jonathan Lemire, and again, welcome to Courtney Subramanian for joining us tonight. Coming up for us, one shot does it, but can we get the newest vaccine out there fast enough to beat the oncoming variants? One of our top doctors standing by to talk with us. And later, the big signs are in place. But how much will this weekend be a super spreading event for the big lie? All the big name Republicans who tried to overturn the election are on the dais, heading to Florida for the weekend. For the rest of us, the 11th hour is just getting underway on a Thursday night.
Hey everyone, it's MSNBC's Chris Hayes. For the first time since 1892, we have an election in which both candidates have presidential records. It's a chance to take a hard look at what Joe Biden and Donald Trump have actually done as president. On a special Why Is This Happening podcast series called With Pod 2024, The Stakes, I'm talking to experts about the two candidates' records on specific policy areas like immigration, taxes, climate, and more. So you know what's at stake come November. Search for Why Is This Happening and follow.
It was a time of pride for the gay community.
I felt like I was part of a movement to liberate ourselves.
Then came a mysterious and devastating disease.
The latest figures from Los Angeles County.
We were describing evidence of a new acquired immune deficiency syndrome.
This is a story of strength and resilience.
This is our deciding moment. Together, we are greater than AIDS.
Commitment to life. Sunday, April 28th at 9 p.m. Eastern on MSNBC and streaming now on Peacock.
My goal was to get 100 million COVID vaccine shots in people's arms in my first 100 days as president. Today, I'm here to report we're halfway there. 50 million shots in just 37 days since I've become president.
Millions of additional doses are on the way as companies ramp up that supply chain. And tonight, the FDA announced Pfizer's vaccine can now be stored at standard freezer temperatures. That's a big deal instead of those ultra cold conditions. But coronavirus variants remain an urgent threat right about now, despite a drop in cases and a drop in hospitalizations and deaths. The president had an urgent warning today. This is not a time to relax. That nicely matches the message our next guest has been putting out for months. Back with us again tonight is our friend Dr. Vin Gupta, critical care doctor specializing in exactly these types of illnesses, also an affiliate assistant professor out at the University of Washington Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation. So, Dr., J&J looks real. It has the benefit of being one shot. Sadly, just 24 doses puts it at a number below these other companies, though we're quick to point out that would normally mean half of 48 million people's doses. So that's 24 million Americans who will get it right off the bat. Do you like it versus the other vaccines? Do you like all of them in light of these approaching variants? And I know something about your answer because I saw what you tweeted out today, the infected lung versus the clear lung. All the evidence people should need to go get the vaccine, regardless of brand.
Well, first of all, good evening, Brian. It's good to see you. And secondly, you just answered my question by showing that image. For all the viewers out there and for all your viewers, please share this image with your loved ones and those around you. This is what you need to know. There's a lot of confusion out there. I get told all the time, why are we talking percentages when this is the image we need to focus on? The image, that lung on the left, that's a healthy lung. Envision that that's your lung if you get the vaccine, despite what's going on with the pandemic. That's going to be your lung. You will be clear of any pneumonia, anything that's happening on the right side. What's happening on the right side, we don't want that for anybody. But that's severe pneumonia from COVID-19. That's pus filling the air sacs of the lungs. And you know what, Brian? All of the vaccines right now that are approved or near approval, J&J included, will protect all of us very well from that ever happening. So that's critical that everybody understands that, regardless of the variant. So the quicker you get your vaccine, the first one available, the sooner you will be protected from the intensive care unit and from that image on the right.
I have to follow up, though, with the scary news of this New York City variant. People are hearing these reports, not knowing what to think, though, as you point out, the bottom line remains, get the vaccine when it's your turn. Don't ever turn it down. But what about these individual variants that are popping up?
Well, the New York City variant versus the variant first identified in South Africa, all these variants are certainly worrisome. But you know what, Brian? They should just force us to be extra vigilant for the next 8 to 12 weeks while we're awaiting the vaccine. If you're awaiting the vaccine, all these variants mean is just please avoid unnecessary travel, continue to wear a high-quality mask, distance. Don't do things that you haven't already been avoiding for the last 12 months. Just be vigilant until the midsummer or until you get your vaccine, and then we'll be out of this. That's all that we're saying here. These vaccines will prevent you from ending up in the intensive care unit. These variants, while worrisome, will force us to be more vigilant, more on top, more keeping all these infection control measures top of mind.
Now, let's talk about treatment. Just for the moment, let's set aside the vaccines for this next question. If I came into your ER today presenting with symptoms, difficulty breathing, low blood low oxygen levels in my blood, what would my chances be as an otherwise healthy male versus same thing, presenting with the same symptoms a year ago?
Well, let me say this, Brian. In the case of the individual you just presented, we know how to care for that patient well. If they end up in the ICU, they very well may. We know how to care for that individual. We may put them on their belly, for example. We're really good at supportive care. Let me say also to all of you out there that are watching right now, if you're not that sick, as Brian just pointed out, that individual that Brian described is sick enough to come into the emergency room. If you have mild symptoms, you don't have a low oxygen level, but you're coughing, you have some shortness of breath, but you're safe enough to be at home. If you've developed those symptoms within the last 10 days, if you're older than 65 or you have a pre-existing condition, go to combatcovid.hhs.gov MSNBC.gov, because you might get access and you might be eligible for a monoclonal antibody therapy. Brian, you and I talked about this therapy at length back in October when former President Trump received that therapy. The NIH just a few days ago recommended this for just the exact individual I described. There's great anecdotal data as well that these therapies might keep you out of the hospital. So for all of you out there, please go to combatcovid.hhs.gov. We have 3,000 deaths right now, 70,000 new cases every single day right now. You can say potentially have halt progression of illness if you get access to this therapy, if you meet those criteria.
Well, thank you for that. Thank you for all of it. We are so close to a brighter day. It's just going to take a little more work to get there by all of us, especially people in your line of work. Dr. Vingupta, our thanks for taking our questions. Coming up for us, one of our next guests predicts the former president is about to put an exclamation point on his domination of the party.
What we will see on Sunday is we will see the start of planning for the next administration. And I can tell you, the people that are at the top of that list, all of them have Trump as their last name.
At least eight possible GOP presidential hopefuls are due to speak at the CPAC convention. But as Politico puts it tonight, quote, Trump is the party's undisputed leader at the moment and for the foreseeable future. His grip on the Republican base and his effect on the minds of White House hopefuls is so total that the path to the GOP nomination is best defined by the degree of loyalty to Trump. Back with us again tonight, Mark McKinnon, former advisor to both George W. Bush and John McCain. He's now one of the co-hosts of The Circus on Showtime. And we welcome back at long last Jeremy Peters, political reporter for The New York Times. He's recently been hard at work on his forthcoming book, Insurgency, How Republicans Lost Their Party and Got Everything They Ever Wanted. Fantastic title. Congrats, Jeremy. When the time comes, we'll have you back on and sell some books. Mark, first off to you. I understand you are already at CPAC, though not against your will. If we are wrong, blink your eyes in Morse code. We have a rapid intervention team that can come and get you. Tell us what you are expecting to see. And does this just mean the coronation, forgetting for the moment the norm we're breaking here, when ex-presidents used to disappear and be silent for at least 6 months to give the new president a chance to get their footing? Forget that for a minute. Is this the coronation of the former president?
It certainly is, Brian. And you know, as somebody who walked the bridge to embrace the idea of compassionate conservatism with George W. Bush, for whom I worked, and then John McCain, I was really interested in coming down to hear about the ideas for the what is the next edition of the Republican Party? What is the next chapter going to be post-Donald Trump? Well, it's not going to be post-Donald Trump. We know that. It's going to be with Donald Trump as the ringleader of the Republican Party. Fully three-quarters of people polled say that they would support a run for presidency in 2024. But here's the interesting thing. I expected there was going to be a debate about ideas and a discussion about a Republican agenda here. Matt Schlapp was quoted as saying, the idea that we're going to come up with some kind of conservative platform at CPAC, it rings kind of hollow, he said. Right now, half the country feels cheated by the media coverage of the election. So we're going to go back and cover the facts that most people in the media canceled. They have seven panels that are going to be discussing the notion of, quote, election fraud. And believe me, I've looked at this issue a lot over the years. And the biggest fraud in American politics right now is the notion that there was any widespread or any election fraud, really. I mean, the lieutenant governor of Texas, Dan Patrick, offered $1 million reward for anybody that could come up with any election fraud. And for all I know, he hasn't let go of a penny yet.
Mr. Peters, I have this for you, a reading from Matt Lewis, and he writes, when a political party loses the presidency, it normally casts its eyes toward the future. Makes sense. Not so this year. Donald Trump's speech this coming weekend sends the message that he is the presumptive 2024 nominee. What is weird is that he is being allowed to do it. After all, Mr. Lewis goes on to say, vampires can only enter your house if you invite them in. So, Jeremy, what does this mean, that they're just not going to go with prevailing math and trends and demographics? Does it mean perhaps that indeed they have no other game?
Well, to continue the metaphor there, Brian, it's Trump's house. It wasn't the Republican Party's to let him in this case. It wasn't CPAC's to let him in. He is the presumptive actual leader of the Republican Party at this moment and for the foreseeable future. And, you know, as Mark was saying, his attitude, his presence has so consumed everything that Republicans and conservatives used to stand for that instead of having a debate over ideas or sessions about various issues at CPAC like you would ordinarily see, what they've done is they've turned this into a grievance fest and are going to relitigate the 2020 election and propagate more false notions of election fraud and the idea that the election was somehow stolen from President Trump. And this is not just what's going to happen at CPAC, Brian. This is what's going to happen in Republican politics for the next few years. I mean, what I'm hearing from people who are running some of the biggest and best funded conservative organizations out there is that the way they're raising money and the way that they are going to pitch themselves to voters is that they are going to continue this idea that elections are unsafe and that President Trump was wronged in 2020. And I think that, in essence, is this Republican Party, where the words conservative and Republican no longer mean what they've meant for a generation. They mean, have you pledged your loyalty to Donald Trump?
Mr. McKinnon, I'm told we have video from a Bloomberg reporter of the arrival of the Trump Dear Leader statue in the convention center tonight, appropriately in gold with red, white, and blue We Love America shorts. Mark, if you were worried that Mitch McConnell suffered a blow to the head prior to his criticism of Donald Trump on the Senate floor 12 days ago, just seems like it was 12 years ago, I bet you were reassured when tonight on Fox News, all of 12 days later, he said, if Trump's the nominee, he's all in.
Yeah, I mean, that's happened to almost every Republican who stuck their neck out or got or stiffened their spine to have any sort of criticism about the president. Most of them reeled it back in. I mean, Nikki Haley, who was seen as a very prospective challenger for 2024, came out with some, you know, fairly, you know, pretty simple criticism of the president. And she is, you know, she's been castigated and disinvited from seeing Trump or even to CPAC. So that's happened to everybody. You know, I just saw a great quote from an earlier Republican, Dwight Eisenhower, Brian, and he said, if a political party doesn't have the determination to advance a cause that is right and that is moral, then it's not a political party. It's a conspiracy to seize power. And as Jeremy was saying, it's all about grievance now. It's all about this was taken from us. And it's all about a conspiracy to seize power because they're promoting a conspiracy. The power was taken away from them.
Well put by Mark McKinnon. We're going to take a break. Both of these gentlemen have agreed to stay with us. We'll give Jeremy time to get a hat on. Coming up, the urgent reason behind why Capitol Hill remains fenced off tonight, looking for all the world like an armed encampment. Short story, get used to it.
We know that members of the militia groups that were present on January 6th have stated their desires that they want to blow up the Capitol and kill as many members as possible with a direct nexus to the State of the Union, which we know that date has not been identified. So based on that information, we think that it's prudent that Capitol Police maintain its enhanced and robust security posture until we address those vulnerabilities going forward.
a clear signal from the acting chief of police in the Capitol that tensions remain high there. That fence around the Capitol is going to remain high as well. They have not put out the date of the State of the Union address. Let's just wrap our heads around that for 1 second, because of the active threat by our fellow Americans to blow up the Capitol with the president, vice president, and both chambers of Congress, most of the cabinet and Supreme Court inside. So we have that going for us. Still remaining with us are Mark McKinnon and Jeremy Peters. And Jeremy, this just puts more attention on your forthcoming book on insurrection. Let me ask you about legal jeopardy for the former president. New York just took possession of what's being described as millions of pages of Trump's financial documents, his tax returns, and all the attendant documents. Are Republicans betting that he beats the legal rap again? And this is one of several raps he's looking at post-presidency.
Well, I think that they know that whatever is in those taxes, which a lot of that has already come out thanks to the very diligent reporting of my colleagues. However, what Republicans can't know is exactly how a grand jury will respond to that. What they can do and what they've already been doing, which is taking cues from the president, the former president himself, is to portray him as a victim. And any time he's ever put up on trial or put subject to an investigation, they'll martyr him. And basically, I think that's what they're hoping for here, is to have his name in the headlines again, where, frankly, it's reminiscent, as one Republican described to me earlier today, of the impeachment trial earlier. And it overshadows the Biden presidency. And instead of talking about Joe Biden and what his administration is doing and accomplishing in their 4 years as president, we are once again talking about Donald Trump. I think that would very much delight Republicans and the former president himself.
Hey, Mark McKinnon, here's another friend of this broadcast, upstate New York Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney, on this afternoon with our mutual friend Nicole Wallace. He was talking about his role in what ultimately passed the House today, the Equality Act.
I was thinking about my family when I spoke on the floor today, when I presided for the second time over the passage of the Equality Act. 2 years ago when we did this, 8 Republicans supported it. Today it was 3. They're going the wrong way.
Mark, I've said this a million times on this broadcast. The issue of gay marriage was the fastest moving public issue I have witnessed in my lifetime. If the civil rights struggle had moved with that same striking speed, we would be so much better a society today. Here is the other side of this, since we're talking about the Equality Act. Marjorie Taylor Greene putting up a piece of artwork outside her office in response to her neighbor in Congress who has a transgender child. So now we have that in the hallway. So, Mark, when we talk about being on the right side of history, when we talk about a Republican Party perhaps knowingly bucking the math and demographic trends, what do you make of this?
Well, first of all, you're right on the gay rights movement and legislation that moved, Brian. It's just a phenomenal piece of history, and how that hockey sticks so quickly. And it's amazing to think about the progress that was made so quickly on that issue, and progress today with this legislation. This comes along with news that was reported today, Brian, that 1 in 6 American youth identifies LGBTQT. So, who identify as gay or lesbian and certainly demand those rights, and people recognize that those are their fellow citizens and support them as the Democrats do in Congress. So, I mean, the Republican Party is just getting into a demographic hole here because they are pushing away the people who are going to be an increasing majority in this country.
Mark McKinnon, we wish you luck over the next couple of days, and we'll be watching the circus on Showtime. Loved your interview, by the way, with the CEO of Ford Motors, as advertised during your last appearance. Jeremy Peters, we so look forward to the release of your new book. Gentlemen, it's great to see you. Great to have you both together. Coming up for us, by the end of the weekend, Americans could have one more COVID vaccine to choose from. The pressure's now on. Get those shots into arms as quickly as possible. Outrun the new variants. We'll have that report when we come back.
On the MSNBC podcast, How to Win 2024, political experts, former Senator Claire McCaskill and Democratic strategist Jennifer Palmieri examine the campaign strategies unfolding in this all-important election.
The focus is on the voters that are not necessarily in your corner now.
If Democrats are going to win in 2024, we have to be able to explain what is happening at the border and what the solutions are.
Search for How to Win 2024 wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes every Thursday.
Over 6% of the population is now fully vaccinated against the coronavirus. Despite a rise in inoculations and more vaccine supply, as we said, now in the chain, a lot of Americans are still wary. NBC News correspondent Tom Costello has more for us tonight on a campaign to sway those still undecided.
With the countdown to a third vaccine now down to a matter of hours, an all-out urgent push to reach underserved communities. Vice President Harris at a pharmacy in Southeast D.C. today.
And you're also going out to community and administering vaccines there as well.
While in Massachusetts.
Initially, I was apprehensive. I mean, being an African-American, I was apprehensive.
National Guard troops are on the COVID front lines.
It makes so much sense for all of us to make sure that we're vaccinating people in places where the virus is most active.
As the COVID-19 vaccines become available, you might be asking yourself, should I get it?
Tonight, one of the biggest public education efforts in history is underway in collaboration with the CDC.
The vaccines are safe and effective. They're going to save lives.
Tomorrow, the FDA's outside advisory panel will review Johnson & Johnson's vaccine. Emergency authorization could come by the weekend, with 4 million doses shipping almost immediately. While the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines are somewhat more effective at preventing illness, the J&J shot is 100% effective at keeping people alive and out of the hospital.
When you have a company like J&J, Janssen, that has a very good track record with pharmaceuticals, to have them come in and be in the mix with the other two is nothing but good news.
J&J's vaccine requires just one shot, can be kept in a normal fridge, and appears to be effective against new virus variants. But vaccine executives say Americans should not be choosy.
Take what you can get when you can get it. Any vaccine is better than no vaccine, particularly if it's been reviewed by the FDA and recommended by the CDC.
And you, as the president of Moderna, are making that very clear.
Absolutely, without hesitation.
Also, health officials say there's been an overreaction to normal lab discussions. And in fact, it's premature, they say, to suggest that that variant discovered in New York poses any greater risk at all to people. Tom Costello, NBC News at the NIH in Bethesda, Maryland.
And coming up for us, something that didn't age well from exactly 1 year ago today. There she is. Last thing before we go tonight is something that didn't age well. Here now, future White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany, who promised on day one of her job that she would never lie to the press corps, a promise she broke early and often. This is Kayleigh McEnany from exactly 1 year ago today.
This president will always put America first. He will always protect American citizens. We will not see diseases like the coronavirus come here. We will not see terrorism come here. And isn't that refreshing when contrasting it with the awful presidency of President Obama?
Couple of notes here. First, the coronavirus did arrive, and thanks only to denialism, mismanagement, malpractice, it has killed well over 500,000 Americans. Oh, and about terrorism coming here, they took the Capitol building on the 6th of January. Rioters, white supremacists, militia members, cop killers. And we learned just today, as we said, the next big concern is thwarting any plans they may have to blow up the State of the Union address. That's the next time our entire leadership of our government is due to be in the same place inside that building. And about her last point there, the awful presidency of Barack Obama, we can all agree to that. What a national embarrassment it was that after two terms in office, there was not one decent, juicy scandal for us to talk about. On that note, that is our broadcast on this Thursday night. With our thanks for being here with us, on behalf of all my colleagues at the networks of NBC News, good night.
MSNBC is going to be live here all night.
Today's news requires more facts.
Palestinians and Israelis are blaming each other for the tragedy that has inflamed the region.
More analysis.
Most of the states with the worst rates of gun deaths are ones where Republicans control the state government.
And more perspective.
This is not just about women and pregnant people in Texas. This is about people across this country.
The world's never been harder to understand. That's why it's never been more important to try. MSNBC. Understand more.